Feminism should mean women supporting each other across cultures and continents, right? A global sisterhood. Except that some of us have not been very good sisters. That's the message of Rafia Zakaria's new book, Against White Feminism. Zakaria is an author, an attorney, and a human rights advocate. She grew up in Pakistan, and she's served on the board of directors of Amnesty International. And lately, she's been thinking about the day in 2001 when Colin Powell announced American invasion plans with the backing of a group of prominent American feminists. And that's why Zakaria calls it the first feminist war.
That was probably one of the first times in modern history that the feminist movement, the U.S. or Western feminist movement, instead of serving as a check on state power, as it had even in previous wars like Vietnam, essentially allied itself with the war project. So all these women, all these American women, Hillary Clinton and Madeleine Albright, Laura Bush, even Gloria Steinem, supported this action, even though at that time there were indigenous Afghan feminists on the ground who were very, very against the occupation and the invasion and were arguing for peace.
Well, I mean, the idea at the time was that women and girls in Afghanistan were living under oppressive conditions, and that getting rid of the Taliban would not only strike a blow against terrorism, it would also open the door to more rights for those women, like education in a country in which, what, 30% of the women are illiterate, and jobs and the right to self-determination. So what's wrong with that argument?
What was wrong was you cannot simultaneously bomb a country into the Stone Age and then also say you're going to empower and uplift its women. That's one society. Women and men don't form a separate society anywhere. The problem with the goals was that they were used as window dressing to hide the mayhem and the night raids, home raids, people being dragged away for months, no one knowing where the father or the brother has been taken, just extremely intrusive and demeaning tactics used by the U.S. military who, you know, was fighting a war in Afghanistan. The consequence of that is that those good goals, whether it's education or empowerment or job training, they become delegitimized because they're attached to this very painful and derogatory foreign occupation.
Do you think feminism was invoked cynically, deliberately by the administration and the military in order to build support for the war, and that American mainstream feminists were basically duped into supporting it?
Yes. And I understand the temptation because essentially American feminists at the outset of the war were told that, look, you guys are feminists, you guys are strong, you guys are empowered, and we're going to export you and your greatness to this environment where women are oppressed. And this narrative was a very, very convincing and very, very, you know, a narrative that essentially placed the United States on high moral ground. Even though, I mean, you know, it was repeating a very colonial message of white men going and saving brown women from brown men, which is, you know, the famous adage.
Well, we should talk about Zero Dark Thirty. The movie came out in 2012. It's a fictionalized story about the CIA agent who was involved in the hunt for bin Laden. But you tell just a riveting and an actually really painful story about watching it. What was it like?
Yeah, you know, I went to watch the movie. I was in Indiana at the time, and it was the most isolating and just emotionally wrenching moment because the entire dramatization of that movie is around this idea that a strong woman, undoubtedly a feminist woman, is one who is willing to torture and hurt men who look like my father and my brother and all of my family. You know, I was watching this movie against a larger environment in the United States where, you know, my brother himself had been questioned by the FBI for no reason whatsoever. And I knew a lot of other people who were in a similar position. So watching Americans uncritically embrace and digest this person, the CIA agent, who, you know, it's like there's a famous line in that movie when they first hear it go, she's a killer. And being a killer was supposed to be this ennobling thing. And I saw in that movie and its reception almost like a culmination of what the Bush administration had commenced.
As the coalition force occupation went on and the whole humanitarian aid project really ramped up in Afghanistan, we began seeing more and more stories about shelters for women and schools for girls and women getting jobs in government. Pragmatically, did women's lives improve?
Look, I mean, I won't lie that as a feminist myself, I'm not from Afghanistan, but neighboring Pakistan, and this is typical of a lot of projects that try to empower women. So in the short run, yes, there is an improvement, right? There are women in government. There are more women working. There are more universities and schools open. But because this was such a top-down thing, right, where the money was coming externally, there was really no cultural or political buy-in to the increased presence of women. Mm-hmm. It was essentially a gamble that, okay, let's just get women in these roles. And once they're in these roles, that might foment some kind of a cultural transformation and social transformation in Afghanistan. And of course, like, you know, the events of the past couple of months have shown that that's not true.
Well, you're talking about the dangers of trickle-down feminism. Your phrase, this idea that what women everywhere in every country need is the kind of life that middle to upper middle class white women have, a world in which every woman wants a career and a glass ceiling to bust.
That's exactly right. And that was the, you know, core kernel. Trickle-down feminism was how women's empowerment within Afghanistan basically failed.
How much of this do you think goes back to colonialism, which, you know, seems to have left its sticky traces on everything?
Oh, I mean, yes, you know, the book starts from the colonial era for that reason. For instance, I present the example of Gertrude Bell, this British woman who goes out to the Middle East at a time when the British Empire has essentially conquered all of the Middle East. And she goes saying, I'm a person in this world. I'm a person in this world, which what she means is, you know, she doesn't even have the vote back home in London, but she goes to Jerusalem and to Haifa. And over there, being a white woman means you're still above brown men. And so there's this sort of immediate racial privilege that is accrued to you. And, you know, you see the same sort of tropes kind of repeated in Iraq and Afghanistan, where white female journalists from the United States, New York Times journalists who went out there. And of course, yes, they are above brown women and brown men in that society. And so you have them exercising their white privilege in sort of careerist ways, such that they appear feminist heroines to the women back home, but they're really part of an oppressive racial hierarchy.
That's, you know, let's just tease that out just a little bit, because it's not immediately obvious to me. And I'm not sure that I would agree with you that all these women war reporters and journalists went out in a blatantly careerist way. It seems to me that it's more like they went and profiled girls going to secret girls' schools and women running book clubs. They used their gender as a way in, with the intention, probably good intentions, of simply telling women's stories. But the question is, when does telling somebody's story become using somebody's story?
The point when it becomes predatory is that in a lot of cases, the women that they were writing about stood to be actually physically harmed from the story. So, for instance, Lindsay Addario, the Pulitzer Prize winning photographer, right? When she talks about going into a secret school, hiding from the Taliban, and she takes pictures of those girls, she's endangering those girls because that's the whole point of the secret school, right? It exists so that the identities of those women won't be known and they can continue to operate this school. So when you take that picture and it's published in the New York Times, it's obviously no longer secret. But nobody even considered that in that story. Hmm. And it's that part to me that is disappointing.
And that's where the legacy of the kind of Victorian patronizing benevolence comes in. It's like, as long as it seems like we're motivated by humanitarian reasons, it can be easy to treat the people you're trying to help as victims and assume that you know what's going to be good for them.
It's important to recognize that white feminism gets some of its sort of self-righteousness from presenting that contrast between the white woman as progressive, forward-looking, pioneering, and all other women as oppressed and far, far behind in their journeys to feminism and empowerment. And the fact is that's simply not true. It comes from the colonial era, definitely, right? And it's ironic to consider that now, for instance, one of the visual comparisons that's always drawn is the burqa. These women are covered, the burqa. You know, back in the Victorian age, women were going to India and they were scandalized by the saris because they were showing too much flesh. How are you showing your midriff? And, you know, this is so bad. It doesn't matter what it is. It becomes a subject of derision because it doesn't accord with the white feminist project of the moment.
So going forward, what would real sisterhood be?
I think real sisterhood would be a very intentional and pointed effort to have these difficult conversations around race so that we can recognize the real battle, right? The larger battle, which is against patriarchy. Mm-hmm. I really think that this can be done.
Yeah, I actually think it's a really exciting and potentially transformative time.
I completely agree with you. Yes.
Rafia Zakaria is an author and human rights advocate. Her new book is called Against White Feminism.